One of the things that I enjoy doing when it comes to this time of year between Pesach and Shavuos is, right, but not just learning Pirkei Avos, but trying to take a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos and make it, as they say, Noigeya L'maiseh, something that applies in a very practical way. A lot of times, we learn Mishnahs in Pirkei Avos and they seem very abstract and fluffy. Anyway, it's like nice mitos, it's nice ideas. And they're obviously intended to be a lot more than that. It's incorporated into the Torah Shebaal Peh and the Mishnayos. Truth of the matter is, the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos is actually Brises, as the first one actually indicates to you. And it was included so that there'll be enough of them for one a week between Pesach and Shavuos. Otherwise, if only five, that's not enough. So we have these Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos. Just by way of very, very brief introduction, you know how the first Mishnah starts?
Yeah.
Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai. Which is a great place to begin all of Shas. And do you have any idea where Pirkei Avos appears in Shas?
Like, at the end.
Like smack in the middle.
Oh, okay.
In the end would be probably worse. But it's not at the beginning. And you would certainly expect this to be the introduction to all of Shisha Sidrei Mishnah Shas, right?
Yeah, I don't think at the end would be worse.
No? It's like, no, like in case you missed, like, it by now?
Yeah. Kind of like one of those, like, by the way, this is all, like, because Moshe got the Torah.
But the middle makes it seem very strange.
Yeah, the middle's strange. Like, the end would make more sense.
So why in the world do you think that this introduction to the Torah Shebaal Peh is smack in the middle of Shas, the end of Seder Nezikin?
Another, in case you forgot.
In case you forgot in the middle. Wake up. So, Rav Avadya Meir Bar Tanura, the Rav, see, he writes, basically, that there's a reason to say it here, whereas there's not a reason to say it elsewhere. It's obvious everywhere else. I mean, that's what Mishnayos are. Mishnayos are Torah Shebaal Peh. Where else did Torah Shebaal Peh come from, other than from Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai? Why would it need to be especially mentioned in the context or as an introduction to Pirkei Avos? Because Pirkei Avos, hu haya oimer, hu haya oimer, hu haya oimer. Again and again, it seems to be phrases, statements, ideas that various gedolim felt, thought, mentioned, liked to say. So that's what the Rav writes in the beginning. That's his introduction to explain it. As he said, you should know that this is part of Torah Shebaal Peh, just like everything else. Which is really interesting, right? Because when you think about that, it really gives us a different perspective on Pirkei Avos. Because instead of viewing Pirkei Avos as nice ideas that are just, you know, valuable, it becomes actually, oh, I mean, this is like a real Torah Shebaal Peh, like everything else. Well, then why does it say, hu haya oimer, he used to say? Sounds like he made it up. Well, that's exactly the point. Everyone has ways that they like to say things. And it could be everyone has a certain angle, perhaps an angle more in presentation than anything else. So it's hu haya oimer. This is how he used to say it. But you shouldn't think that this isn't part of the corpus of Torah Shebaal Peh, which is important since we can learn Pirkei Avos. So okay, I guess it's Torah Shebaal Peh. Which then leads us to wonder, but a lot of these things seem so abstract. So the world stands on three things: Torah, Avodah, Gemulus, Chasadim. That's nice. Okay, what's for lunch? Like, how does that impact us? Like, what is that, like, so what? So what I try to do in the summertime when we do this is try to really zero in on some idea that on the one hand seems very abstract and figure out, well, how is this Nogei L'maaseh? How does this affect us in a practical way? So the one I worked on this past Shabbos with Perek Beis, because that's the Perek we're up to this Shabbos, Perek Beis, this past Shabbos. Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud-Dalet. I don't know if it's Yud-Dalet in that one, sometimes it's Yud-Tes. Sometimes the Mishnayos are broken up differently. But whichever one it is in yours, it starts to be Elazar Omer Hevishkud Lil Matera. Perek Beis and Perek Avos. You have the Perek Beis? So take a look. I'm not sure which Mishnah is in that particular breaking up of it. It might be 19, it does, or maybe not. But it starts to be Elazar Omer.
Mine says Rabbi Omer.
So maybe it's Yadalad? Go to Yadalad? Does it say Rabbi Elazar Omer? In Perek Beis. You have it?
Nope.
it's okay. They get broken up differently in different months, so it's hard to... Yeah, it's Yud Tes in this one. Page 247. Yeah, and the article sitter, 247. The all Hebrew one, you know, the Frum edition, right? Okay, good. What? Yeah. So you see, it says Rabbi Elazar Omer. Here we go. Rabbi Elazar, he says.
It's really hot.
That's not what he says.
No, yeah. Sorry.
You want to open the window?
Yeah, yes. It's like, I'm very uncomfortable.
Well, it's summertime now. There's no more snow.
Yeah, until tomorrow, there's like a blizzard.
Actually, this week it seems like it's like 60-40, like the whole week. So, Rabbi Elazar Omer, have a shkaila l'mitzer. So, here we go. We're starting the Mishnah. I will let the proverbial cat out of the bag. There are going to be four things that he's saying. And our job is going to be to figure out why he needs to say each one of those. And is there, which we assume there would be, some kind of theme or common denominator that binds them all together? That is his basic message. Because otherwise, why does he have to say four things? Are they disparate? You know, what are they doing together? So number one. Shkayd l'lmoyed Torah. Okay, translation. L'lmoyed Torah, we know. Learn Torah. Got it. What's shkayd? Shin kuf vav dalet.
Oh, no.
So, you know, there's this great song, Ashkedia parachas, Hashem ish bazarach, Siburim berush kol gan. No? Yeah, so it means an almond. So, an almond is called a shkedia. And even in Chumash, you find this idea. If you remember when Korah had his rebellion, remember this? He rebelled against Moshe and Aaron and said, what is this, nepotism? I want a position too. So, once that rebellion was put down, it seems the people were still not convinced. So they took staffs, sticks, for each shevet, yeah? And they put them in the Kodesh HaKadosh, yeah? And one of them sprouted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah?
And sprouted almonds.
Yes.
Why almonds?
Those are the fastest to emerge. The first things to blossom, apparently, are the almond blossoms. They're very fast, very quick to come out, to emerge, to blossom. So the language of Hashkada is a language of someone that's very... has a lot of alacrity, zrizos, first one to do something, maybe has a connotation of focus, of extra diligence, that's very quick to do it and very involved in it, very focused in it. So perhaps we could translate it as a diligence. It's a hard word to translate, but he added that word. So Rabbi Elazar's point so far is not learn Torah. There's a focus on it. Something called some sort of diligence in the learning of Torah. Okay, very nice. So he says, learn Torah hard, or with diligence, or be quick to do it, or something. All right, whatever. Number two. You ready? What does yours say? There are different gear solos here. Yavida?
Yeah.
And know what there is to answer to an apikoros. Well, it doesn't say answer an apikoros. It says you should know what there is to answer to an apikoros. So they have to wonder, does the Mishnah want us actually addressing these people? And who are they? What is an apikoros anyway? So there are two streams of thought here. One said, well, apikoros is actually a Greek word. Makes a lot of sense based on the way that it sounds, apikoros. What else has an os at the end? You know, it sounds like it's got to be Greek. Tosos is in Greek. But, so apikoros may be a Greek word for someone that, you know, followed a certain path. But it is interesting that several of the Mepharshim want to relate it to a Hebrew word? You want to take a guess?
They want
to relate it to a Hebrew word. Not with the Samach. Samach is not. It's some strange addition. But apikor. Pakar. Pei kuf resh. That would be bakar with a base. But pei with traversal. Pei kuf resh. Hefker. They relate it to the word hefker. That these are people who are free thinkers. People who think you can say whatever you want about the Torah. They've made themselves and the Torah and this whole limud hefker. So it's a person that is not dedicated and committed to Torah as letting the Torah speak to him. He's one of these, you know, free thinkers as, you know, whatever. So that's one way to look at it. So, number one, there's an emphasis on some element of learning Torah. Number two, you should know what there is to answer to an apikoris. Number three, vidali fnei mi ata omel. How do you translate that? Vida, and know. For who you are, omel. Amelus is toiling. Toiling, when you're working really, really, really hard. Difficult struggle is amelus. Know before whom you are toiling. So what does that mean? Hashem, right? Yeah? No? That's what I would assume too. Why is that important in this context? Learn Torah with diligence. Know what there is to answer, not be curious. Know before whom you are toiling. V'ne'eman hu ba'al malachtecha, trustworthy is your boss. Right? The ba'al of your malacha means the master of your work. So he's your boss. Tell me what to do. So trustworthy is your boss. Huh? I'm not sure yet, but I'm just translating it. Trustworthy is your boss, sheyishalem lecha, that he will pay to you, schar, the reward or the wages, pe'ula secha, of your pe'ula, of your work. Trust him, he'll pay you. Any thoughts on the Mishnah? That's it.
It's weird.
Why do you see, why weird?
It's just like, it doesn't make sense.
Which part doesn't make sense?
All of it.
You don't see a stream of thought. You don't see a connection.
Yeah, and it doesn't, like, give a reason or anything. It's just, like... It's just,
right, no reason. That's true.
Here's some information, but, like, we don't know who it's talking about, what it's talking about, and what.
Okay. Jacob, what do you say? Thoughts? So that's the problem, right? Is that you have a mission like this in Pirkei Avos, because they're basically all like this. And you read it, and you're like, okay... All of that sounds like a good idea. It's good to learn Torah. It's good to know what the answer in Apikoros is. I'm not sure if it is or isn't, because I'm not sure that, number one, you should be learning the things that are necessary to know how to answer in Apikoros. That's interesting. And number two, I'm not sure you should be talking to these people. I'm not sure you can be successful talking to these people. And who are they? And why is it important in this context to say no before whom you are toiling? I mean, is that always important? Is that important for some reason in this context more than in any other context? And why should I not trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to pay me back for my efforts, for my work? What's going on over here? So that, we have to break this nut. We have to figure out a way to get into this Mishnah and figure out what's going on. So, you don't have any further thoughts?
I don't have any.
Last chance. Before I brainwash you. Just kidding. Let's begin. There are two ways to begin to approach the Mishnah. Let's focus on the first two phrases.
Two ways
to learn the Mishnah. And both are going, it's going to be learned in these two ways. But this is what we're going to have to deal with and look at it in these two ways to extrapolate all the information properly from the Mishnah. Is the introduction to the Mishnah the focal point? Or is the introduction to the Mishnah really an introduction to the second point, which is the focal point? In other words...
Can you explain the introduction
of the Mishnah? Yeah, I'm explaining right now. That's just that's my introduction.
Yeah, okay.
Is the focal point of the Mishnah the Hashkadah, the diligence with which you're supposed to learn Torah? Or is the focus of the Mishnah that you have to be able to deal with an apikaris?
Oh, or is it the other way around?
So, let's approach it both ways for a minute and talk it through. If the purpose of the Mishnah is to focus on how much you have to be focused on learning, then what we're saying is, we'll go through each phrase, Habishkodlam al Torah means you have to really have a serious diligence, a dedication, meaning you're not, your phone is not on when you're learning, you're not anticipating a text or anything else, you are totally and completely focused on your learning. Now, to what depth does your learning have to go? Torah in general has an XY axis. There's a certain amount of information that there is to learn. Theoretically, any one of us could cover Kol HaTorah Kula in the, which one's this, the horizon plane, or the X-axis. The X-axis, anybody theoretically should be able to cover all the information. You read all the words of the Mishnah, all the words of the Gemara, all the words of the Mishnayos, all the words of the Zohar. I mean, there's not that much, right? But the Y-axis, the depth of all of that, is infinite. So we'll never, no one will ever be able to cover all of that, the depth of it. But on the X-axis, just the plane of the horizon, to be able to cover the information that's there is not really so much. So, shkoyd l'matara means that there's a, you have to learn it with a depth. It's not enough to just superficially cover it, which one might have imagined, okay, maybe that's sufficient, as long as I cover it, you know. And the truth of the matter is, we have statements from Gedolim that say that whatever a person learns on some level, he'll have an olam haba. So you have to at least cover the X-axis. So then what's the second point? Whatever you get. I mean, it's possible. So the idea is that in the base medrash, shalmalo, when a person's finished with this world, so he wants to have in his pocket the Torah to be able to continue to learn when he's no longer in the world, his neshama will continue to learn. So you have to try to cover it all. Should cover it all in your lifetime. We got to figure out a plan to do it. We did Masech HaSukkah this year. But a lot more to do. But so then what would be the second point according to that? Vida, you should know. Ma she tashiv. Not lehashiv, ma she tashiv. And it da ma. In other words, the second phrase doesn't say and answer apikorsim. It says know what there is to answer in apikoris. What does that mean to you to say it in that way? That the guy's a sheepish. I know. Okay. Know what there is to answer the apikoris. Know what there is to answer in apikoris.
Versus.
No. Answer apikorsim. Go out into the street.
Oh.
Answer apikorsim. Debate them publicly. Yeah, or maybe not even the appropriate time. Just know what, theoretically, to answer. So according to this way to learn the Mishnah, the point of the second phrase is not because the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar, wants you out in the street debating apikorsim. What does he want from you?
When I said appropriate time, I meant just if they come to you.
Oh, fine, exactly.
Yeah, or also know when they're looking for an answer versus when they're just...
That's also a significant point that not so clear in the Mishnah. But what Rabbi Elazar is saying, according to this, would be the depth of your learning should be such that what?
That
you'd be able to answer not because if you should encounter one, if he should ask you, or maybe he never will, but it's not the point. The point is that your learning must include that. Now, according to that, are you picking up Sifrei Minim? Are you picking up books written by apikorsim to figure out what they're going to say? No. It's just that it's defining the seriousness and the depth and to a certain extent the scope of what you're learning. So that you're even covering not just the things, the questions that a normal person would ask, but you're even prepared for any kind of question on it because you know how... What I mean to say is, when you have a guy that's learning yeshiva his whole life, and he's never really encountered anybody that's in Kiruv or any of the questions that they ask. There's so many things that a typical guy that, an FFB, as they say, will take for granted in his learning. And when someone asks him, well, you know, why do you believe in that? Or why is that true? Or why does the Gemara do that? Or why do we have to follow what it says in the Gemara? Or any of those types of questions. Unless he's thought about it and asked those questions, he's not going to know the answer. So Vida Masha Tashiv is saying to that person, according to this, that's a question that you have to ask when you're learning. If that's true, so what's next? When I came back from Eretz Yisrael, my parents lived in north Toronto. It was so north that I could see, you know, Santa Claus. No. Anyway, so the Ramban thinks the Shadim all live in the North Pole, you know, so the elves, I'm not really sure what they are. The Ramban, he writes that the Shadim don't really live around us anymore.
Yeah.
So they're in the North Pole, he says. That gives you a different perspective on Santa and his elves, no? Anyway, so when I came to Toronto, my parents lived so far away from the typical Jewish community that it wasn't walkable very well on Shabbos. And during the week also, it was a hike. But okay, so we drove to, you know, to Minyan whenever we needed to, no big deal. But Shabbos, we were kind of on our own. And I wanted to have a place where I felt, you know, I could learn. So I made a little base medrash in the basement. And I decided to make a sign. You know how a lot of shuls, there's a sign either on the omud where the chazan daven's from, or sometimes it's a big one, maybe on the parochas, or who knows when. It says, Da, lifnei mi,
ata
omed.
That's what I said.
So what does that mean?
Where you stand.
Stand? Like where? What does it mean? What is it trying to say?
It's trying to say, like, you know that, like, you're standing in front of the Creator.
So that's always true, right? Yeah. So it's just a message you get when you go to shul, but you're supposed to remember when you leave, or you're only standing in front of Hashem in shul?
No. It's just a message saying, oh, remember who you stand in.
So I think...
It just makes sense as in a religious institution.
But you don't have to keep it in mind when you leave?
No, you do.
You do. I think that... You keep a sign on your forehead, maybe. I don't know.
They should post it in Times Square.
Times Square on your phones every time you take it out. Right? So I think that it's a language of tefillah. What do we call Shemoneh Esrei? The Amida. Because standing is a language of prayer. We know that from Avram Avinu, that it says that Vayashkem Aboker L'Mokom Asher Amad Sham. That he got up early in the morning to the place that he stood there. What is he standing there? Because that's where he davened for Sodom. When he was debating with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with this tzaddik and that many tzaddikim, remember? So the Torah refers to it as a place that he stood in front of Hashem. So Amida is a language of tefillah. So Da'alif Miata Omeid, of course, is always true. But it's more true, or how much more so it's true, when we speak about davening in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So a person's supposed to have an extra added perspective that he's omeid lifnei hamelech. And that way he'll take his tefillos more seriously. And all. And it's a reminder, you know. Of course we're always standing in front of Hashem. But you're about to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know. So da lifnei mita omeid means, no, before whom you're davening. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is listening, and you have to take it seriously. So I made a sign that said, da lifnei mita lomeid. Low made. Know before who you are learning. In other words, we know from Chazal that the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, so why was it destroyed? Second Beis HaMikdash, first Beis HaMikdash, I don't know. But in any case, it says the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Why? Mipnei shelo berchu b'Torah tchila. Because they didn't make Birchas HaTorah before they learned. And everyone asks, that's like one of these really, really terrible things, to miss out on Birchas HaTorah? I mean, come on, really? That bad? You destroy a Beis HaMikdash?
No intention.
Right, so it means to say that a bracha gives a perspective on the learning. It's a recognition that this is a divine chachma, a divine wisdom, and that they apparently were approaching it from an intellectual perspective, and it was just an intellectual pursuit. Apparently, that's really, really bad. Okay, Alma of the hearts. So, That's what the Rishonim write. Is that it doesn't mean they didn't make a Berachas Torah. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but that's not the point. The point is that they didn't have the right perspective on the Torah. Da lifnei mi ata loy mei. Know before whom you are learning. You should know that when you're toiling in Torah, this is the Hashem's Torah. It's a divine wisdom, and the depth that you're trying to plumb is deeper than you can ever imagine. So now we have a good theme, right? Because it's shkoidel matura. It's not just learn. It's that there has to be an enthusiasm, there has to be an alacrity, a zrizus, there has to be a depth to your learning, there has to be a seriousness to your learning. You have to learn to such an extent that even questions you wouldn't normally ask, you have to know the answers to those things too. Even if you never encounter an apikaris, it doesn't matter. That's part of limud ha-Torah. And you should know. Understand who you're toiling in front of. It's a Kaddish Baruch Hu. This is a real deal. So that'll motivate you even more. And the last phrase in this way, context may be a little bit harder to understand. The Baal Malachdecha is trustworthy, it'll pay your wages. How would you say that fits into this theme? So I don't know, maybe there are different ways to approach this, but a lot of times you learn something. Let's take last week's parsha. Bayis HaMenuga. So the Gemara says that a house that had saras, one opinion is it never happened. Well, then why do we need all these halachas about what to do with it, when to take out the stone, and like what? Ben Saramara. Never happened. Well, then what do we need all these halachas? We got a whole barrack in Sanhedrin, Ben Saramara. What's going on over here? Iranidachas. Never happened. Well, it's so much terror on this. Seriously? The answer is because, and we discussed this when we spoke about learning Gemara, that the purpose of learning is not just halacha lemaisa. The purpose of learning is limud ha-Torah, to absorb all of that chachma. So there could be a lot of things that a person is learning, including if a person never encounters an apikaris in his life and he never really had any doubts about any of these things. And now he's learning all these things too, that his Torah is deep and all-encompassing and broad. And then what's this for? So how does this help with that? That even though you don't see a practical benefit to everything you learned, what? Trust your boss. He'll pay you back. No? When you see a practical benefit, so you're doing it because you see a practical benefit, but even when you don't see a practical benefit, it doesn't matter. You need to trust that all of this was really worthwhile, and you'll be rewarded appropriately. So that's Avenue A, if you're in Brooklyn. No, that's one way to look at the Mishnah. That really the focus is on the hashkada with which you're supposed to learn. And everything else really is just expanding on that. Good? We're going to switch gears. Now we're going to argue that the focal point of the Mishnah is actually the second point. Really the point is you have to know what to answer an apikaris. So then, why does it start off with have a shkodel mutar? Just start off by saying, know what to answer an apikaris. No?
Like, I'm trying to, like, think of a reason, and every single time I think of that reason, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, then why did it just not say the Torah after?
So, what are the challenges or problems with approaching an apikaris?
Approaching an apikaris?
Yeah. If you actually practically have to deal with one. Until now, we've been discussing learning Torah in sort of an abstract way. Yeah, but you have to know what the I mean, yeah, there's something to say, obviously, right? So why shkoyl? What? You think you don't have to learn Torah to prove them wrong? Well, because the apikaris is challenging the Torah. Apparently. In other words, if he's not challenging the Torah, there's nothing to talk about. Okay. But our religion. I mean, we don't care if they challenge a different religion.
They don't care for the Torah's reasoning.
Okay. Maybe they're focused on logic. It could be. And you'll... So, one of the challenges if you're dealing with an apikaris that is only looking at things from a logical perspective is to prove to him that Torah has a logical system. And it may not be pure logic like you're looking at it because it has its own axioms. Are those axioms legitimate? Are the axioms not legitimate? Is there really a science of learning Torah? Is there not really a science of learning Torah? You know, a person that tries to apply pure logic to certain situations when certain tools are necessary may miss out on a lot of things. Because there are certain tools that you have to utilize. But logic may dictate you approach it in a different way. Yeah, but you don't know the substance. You know, if you're dealing with mining something in a certain way, and logic would dictate you use explosives in order to get at things in the best way, but you don't realize a substance is flammable, well, when that's going to be a problem. So you have to know the right tools to utilize, even when logic may dictate otherwise. When I learned, I only really went skiing once. But when I went skiing, it was very interesting for me because they kept telling me, don't lean back. You ski?
Yeah.
Don't lean back. But you want to lean back because you're afraid you're going to fall down the mountain. So that's your gut reaction. Naturally, you start to, well, too much forward, you push back because you don't want to fall. But if you do that, you're going to fall. No, but you hear what I'm saying, right? In other words, your natural reaction is to make sure you don't lean too much forward because you're going to fall down.
We were on jet skiing.
What?
We were on jet skiing.
No.
They tell you, don't go slow and make a turn. And that's exactly what I did in the entire jet ski. Flipped over.
Oh my. Because you were nervous?
No, it's just like in my head, I was like...
You have to slow down to turn.
Yeah. Right. And like, if you're making a turn, you cannot be going slow.
Right. Oh, right, okay, I mean, that's counterintuitive, right?
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I'm talking about. Logic or natural logic, common sense, whatever it is, may dictate a certain approach. But if you don't know what you're dealing with, you may get it wrong. So you have to demonstrate to a person that the Torah has its own inherent logic to it, and you have to appreciate the system, number one, the substance, and number two, the tools with which to deal with that substance, and it's not always going to be the way you think. That was what Korach said at the Rav Soloveitchik. He said, there's a whole piece written up about this, Reflections of the Rav, Volume 1, that he said that Korach represented the common sense rebellion against Torah authority. And what were his arguments, if you remember, in Vayikach Korach, the Midrashim saying, he said, let's say that I've got a beged, it's got four corners, and it's all techeles. It's made out of techeles. It's dyed techeles. I got to put another techeles string on the end? Like, are you serious? Isn't the whole point of the Tchelis to remind me of this, so I remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The whole thing's Tchelis! The answer is the halakha is you gotta put a piece of Tchelis on the end. Oh, come on, that's ridiculous! And another one of his arguments was, let's say you have a room that's full of Sfarim. Full of Sfarim. Lots of Sfarim in the room. You gotta put a little mezuzah on the door. There's a Sifrei Torah everywhere! I gotta put a mezuzah on the door? Doesn't make any sense. The answer is, yeah, you gotta put a mezuzah on the door. If it's a place you live, you gotta put a mezuzah on the door. So that was his rebellion. The common sense, it doesn't make any sense. That's ridiculous. So the Torah has its own logic, its own system, its own tools. So if you're going to learn a Mishnah, the focus is on answering an Apikuris, the only way you're going to be able to approach him and explain Torah, number one. And number two, is that one of the dangers of approaching an Apikuris is that he may lead you in his direction. And many Mefarshim point this out, that the reason why Hebrishkoidel Matura comes first is because you are not justified, you have no right, and it's dangerous to approach an Apikuris until you have Torah under your belt and your belly is full of it. Malikreso, when a person's filled with Torah, then he has a right, perhaps a mitzvah, to actually approach other people and try to convince them and show the beauty of Torah and whatnot in those types of situations. But a person who doesn't have this hashkada and his limud haTorah ahead of time may very well be influenced by everyone else that he encounters. The big issue. It's a big issue in secular studies. It's a big issue, and you know, everyone talks about Rav Soloveitchik, and he went to college, and this, that, and the other thing, and he was a massive Talmud Chacham by the time he got there. You know? So that's one way to learn the Mishnah, is that really the focus is on answering the Apikuris. And the reason that it begins with Hebrishkoidel Matorah is because it's only justified and allowed once that's in place. Then you should go and approach these people, that's true. And then it says, Dalif ne miata omel. Some actually learn a Mishnah to be saying, you know, the Amel is described here is not the Limud HaTorah. The Amel is your dealings with the Apikars. So you know who you're being Amel in front of? In Apikars. In other words, know whom you're dealing with. Not talking about a Kaddish Baruch Hu, the way these Mefarshim learn. That it's talking about, don't get affected by him. Know who you're talking to and prepare yourself and know that this is a debate. Of course, you can learn it the other way also. Is that no, you have to remind yourself that all of this is part of your Avodas Hashem. And that Kaddish Baruch Hu, of course, is listening to you. And he knows your real intention in getting involved. Sometimes a person may want to get involved because he's not convinced of Torah. Now he wants to get involved with these other people. So Kaddish Baruch Hu knows his Kavana there as well. That's also a separate point that could be made here. So there are different ways to look at this if you read the Mishnah in that way. The last phrase is even more interesting according to this. And your boss, you can trust him to pay you. Why do you need to say that in this context? So imagine a person that is like this. He is a massive Talmud Chacham, and he decides he's going to get involved, whether it's Kiruv or we're dealing with Apikars and Mamish, people that have rejected things, who knows. And he's doing it for the right reasons, and he knows who he's dealing with. And he's just not successful. How much time did he waste? So what's the mission then going to be saying according to that?
Don't worry.
Trust your boss. He'll pay you back. Because he wants you to do that. You did it out of Kavod HaTorah. You did it to prevent Chilul Hashem. Trust your boss. He'll repay you for that. Even though you're not always successful. And that's an important message to people involved in Kiruv. That's for sure. You know, they say, I don't remember who originally said this, but when Cain killed Hevel, do you remember how he killed him? So Chazal say that he like stabbed him all over the place. He didn't know from where the neshama would leave. So he stabbed him all over the place. How do you stab him all over the place? Because the pasuk says, Hashem says to Cain, "Ayeh Hevel Achicha, where is Hevel?" And it says, "Kol demei achicha tzoyakim elai min ha'adama." The voice, so to speak, of demei achicha. You want to take a guess what that means? Demei achicha. Demei. What's demei? What's dam?
Blood.
What's demei? The bloods of your brother. Which is plural bloods. Yeah. So that's the Chazal say is that he stabbed them a bunch of times. Blood meant that he had blood coming out from different parts of his body because he had stabbed him different times. And he didn't know how to make the neshama go out. So somebody said that's the neshama going out. Who knows how the neshama is going to go in? When you're trying to convince somebody and inspire somebody in a world of kiruv, so you never know what's going to affect the person. You got to stab him, so to speak, all over the place. You have to approach him this way, approach him this way, approach him this way. You never know what's going to have an impact on a person. So, Neman Bamalachtecha, L'shalim Schar Pulasecha. So, those are two very different ways to learn this Mishnah. If you take a look in the, you've heard of the Encyclopedia Talmudis? Probably not. Encyclopedia Talmudis, encyclopedia, I don't think it's even finished, which has been worked on for years and years and years and years, which is an encyclopedia of Talmudic terms. So you could look up a term that's used in the Talmud, and there's, wow, tons of information on each topic. Really interesting. So if you look up in volume Tesavav, which is Ches, one of the Ches volumes, it deals with what's called Chachmos Chitonios. Chachmos, wisdoms, Chitonios, outside Torah. So this is obviously the topic, Torah Derech Eretz, Torah Mada, you know, other wisdoms outside of Torah. In there, he quotes this Mishnah. Is this Mishnah a proof in one way or another for this? And he says, you ready for this? He says, there are those that bring this Mishnah as a proof that you are supposed to get involved in other wisdoms. And there are those that use this Mishnah to prove, as proof, that you're not allowed to get involved in other wisdoms. Well, what's going on? Because there are two totally different ways to learn this Mishnah. The first way we learned the Mishnah that's talking about the depth of your learning. So it means you're not supposed to get involved in any depths of other chachmos. You're not even supposed to address an apikoros necessarily. It's just that your learning of Torah is so deep and so broad that you have what to answer an apikoros. But you're not learning anything else. You're spending all your time on it. The other way to learn is that the agenda of the Mishnah is the apikaris. Why is it started with Shkodlum Mantari? Because, well, until you do that, you're not going to be able to address an apikaris. So that's just the precursor. That's the prereq. That's why the Mishnah starts with it. But really, the focus is Da Masha Tashiv. You have to know what to answer because you should be answering these people for Kavod HaTorah, to prevent Chilul Hashem. You know, the Malbim, you know, Rav Shlomo Shapiro Hirsch. There were times in our history, you know, obviously today it is included, but it's not the same extreme, where there were people, the Haskalah and whatnot, reform, early days of the reform movement, where people really attacking the Torah, and there weren't so many people capable of defending it. So when you had certain personalities, like the Malbim and Misham Shval Hirsch, in my mind, they're two of the biggest, obviously Chassam Sofer, like they were, that was their, that they worked very hard on defending the Torah. To be Mekayim this Mishnah. That's part of Kavod HaTorah. It's part of preventing Chilul Hashem. So, if that's the focus of the Mishnah, well, you're going to have to know their arguments. How are you going to know their arguments? You're going to have to read what they write. You're going to have to see what they're arguing in order to defend the Torah and debate them. So it's a proof that you're going to have to be involved in those kinds of other things to know how to approach them. So here in one Mishnah, you have two very, very different approaches to this. Which, you know, is apropos to Eilu Ve'eilu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. That's the way it is in Torah, you know. Are they really a contradiction to one another? Not necessarily. Because the first approach is assuming that you're just learning. And that's true. But once a person has that under his belt, which of course is going to be a massive Talmud Chacham, not your typical person, but then maybe he actually has a mitzvah to go ahead and address people and take that to the public and be able to debate. So it could be that both ways to learn the Mishnah are both true, but there are, it's two different ways to learn the Mishnah. There is, well, so just a few things, I guess some footnotes, and then we'll just stop. But some footnotes with all of this are that there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Lamed Chesem and Bees, where the Gemara quotes our Mishnah. And it says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo yishanu eli apikaris nachri. We're only talking about an apikaris that's not Jewish. Which is the opposite of what we were thinking. Why? Oh, apikaris Yisrael kol shigein de pakar tefei. Which also gives you the implication that the Gemara understood apikaris to be rooted in the word hefker. How much more so a Yisrael has really just abandoned the Torah. And that goes back to, I don't know, maybe both of you, one of you had mentioned this. Sometimes when a person asks a question, he's not asking a question, right? A person can phrase something as a question and really not be asking anybody, what is wrong with you? You know, it's not really a question. Very rhetorical. And people often ask questions like that. And we've discussed this in the past, the Ben Harasha and the four sons that we speak about in the Haggadah and the Seder. So the Torah says, "Kasher yomru l'cha b'neichem," when your children will say to you. It doesn't say when they'll ask you, which it does say by some of the other sons. "Ki yishalcha b'ncha machar leimor," when your son will ask you. But the Rasha, the way the Torah introduces his question, is with the phrase "Kasher yomru l'cha b'neichem," when he'll say to you. Why say? Why not ask? Because he's not asking; he's just saying. Yeah, what I like to say is that the reason why there are four sons is because these are four levels of intellectual maturity. What? No, well, no, I don't think so. But they're levels of a person's maturity, different types of people, and sometimes even one person as he develops, you know. Because there's a person called Ein Yodei Lishol. They're small children that just don't even know how to ask questions because they're not really even curious yet. They just take everything in. And then you have a child that's a little bit older, becomes curious, but he's not intellectually mature enough to make distinctions and know what's what and even present his question in a way that you can answer it. So he just says, "What's that?" And you say, "What's what? Like, what's your question?" And you have to draw out of him, like, what's bothering you? But that's the question of the Tam, Mazos, what's that? They have to draw the question out of him, but at least he's curious. And then you have a chacham. A chacham is a person that has a very sophisticated, directed question. How come we have all these mitzvahs that are divided into three categories? There are testimonies, there's mitzvahs we understand, mitzvahs we don't understand. Like he's already asking a sophisticated question. And then about Rasha. How does the Rasha fit into all of this? The answer is because the Rasha also has a question. That's not a question. He's a level, if you will, of intellectual maturity that's called absolute closed-mindedness. You can have a person that's so intellectually, I don't know, immature, that his question isn't even a question.
Why are we assuming this about him? That's also very simple-minded.
Assuming?
Yeah, why are we assuming this about him?
What do you mean? The Torah says, Kasher, Yom Rilucha B'neichem, your children will say to you. It doesn't say it's a question. It's something they'll say to you. Why are they saying it? Why are they not asking it? It's for two reasons. It's because he refers to... No, it's for two reasons. Because number one, he says, Maha Avoda Zos Lachem. What is this Avoda to you? Like he's not part of it. Like he's not interested in it. Like Lachem. Not, why doesn't he include himself?
But if you're telling me about the Torah, I say, do you really believe that?
Yeah, we're talking about a type of person. We're talking about levels and categories of people that you'll encounter with questions. I'm not sure what you mean. He could have a complicated background. To answer his question, you mean?
Absolutely.
Sure. All I'm trying to say is the question of the Rasha is not a question. That's all I'm trying to say. He's not asking a question. His mind is closed. You can say whatever you want, but it's not going to answer his question. That's why, according to the Vilna Gaon, you don't answer his question. According to the Vilna Gaon, but he's asking a question. When you ask a question, you want an answer.
I don't think
the
when you ask a question, it's not.
The Rasha also.
When you ask a question,
that's why the Torah says Yoimru. Yeah, when your children will say to you. When someone says something to you, they're not listening to your answer. When they ask you, they want your answer. Sometimes a question is not a question, no matter how it's phrased.
I've never heard anyone like that.
He's essentially saying, my favorite color is blue. What's your favorite color? And convince me why it should be, but I'm never going to listen to your answer. That's what he's saying.
I don't think anyone like this actually exists.
You've never had a person that you had a conversation with where they ask you questions. I've had this so many times where they ask you questions and they're not looking for an answer. They're just looking to start an argument.
100%. And what they're looking for, by the way, is you to say anything because they will use it as a justification for whatever they believe in.
This is not the kind of Russia that I think.
Okay. The word Russia could be used in a number of different ways.
Russia
could be
used
in a lot
of
ways.
Russia is someone who cares, but he just sees it as different.
Nope.
No, he's passionate, he just sees it as different.
The answer to the Russia, you'll notice, is the same answer as the Ein Yodei Lishol. They get the same exact answer. And if you read carefully the answer to the Rasha, it says, Hake es shinav, you blunt his teeth, ve'emor lo, and say to him that had he been in Mitzrayim, he wouldn't have been redeemed, right?
Sure.
But he doesn't say you say to him. It doesn't say you respond to him. It says you respond to somebody else that's in the room. What do you mean? Why don't you say you answer the Rasha? Vilna Gaon says, if you read it carefully, it doesn't say you answer the Rasha. It says you turn to the Ein Yodei Lishol, the child that's in the room that could be impacted by him, and you say to that kid, don't listen to what he's saying, because if he had been in the time, he wouldn't even have gotten out. He would have died in Choshech. And it's interesting, because if you take that approach, what's going on over here? And the answer is, because you can't answer this type of Russia. Because it doesn't mean a Russia like he's doing... It's dealing with the intellectual point.
That's what's presented in the Haggadah. So you can say it's a very specific... It's like, that's what's presented there. It's not just saying, oh, he's a Russian. And they explain why he's a certain type of Russia.
It's an intellectual Russia. That's what I like to say. Because if a person is doing averos, if a person is doing
it's a
closed-minded. That's why I mean intellectual. Okay, that's how you want to describe it. It's called a Rasha b'chachma, right? An intellectual Rasha. Right, well, that's, so we're saying the same thing. That's what makes him a Rasha intellectually, is that he's not being an intellectual, right? Is that he refuses to turn on his brain and ask and think. He's decided already, and now he's not open to any new information. That's a Rasha in his Chachma. Anyway, so that's a problem. So the Gemara is saying you can't answer a person like that. So how could the Mishnah tell us you should? The answer is because you can have that by a Yisrael, but apparently you won't typically have it by a non-Jew. That's unbelievable. But it was a great story of Glucksmann Zichron Ibrach. So he was alive in the early days of airplanes. So he was flying, I guess, from Los Angeles back to New York or something. And so the plane had to land to refuel, and they had to like stay overnight or whatever. So anyway, the bottom line is they got on a plane early, early in the morning, so he had to daven and put on his tefillin on the plane, which he didn't want to do, but he didn't have a choice. So there he was on the plane, you know, sitting down and putting on his tefillin davening. So there was a non-Jew sitting next to him that just had never seen this before. So he said, look, if you don't mind my asking, what are you doing? So he explained it to him, you know, with, of course, the word phylacteries and whatever else he said. He got off the plane in New York, and someone else that was on the plane came up to him very upset and said, you know, if you want to be religious, it's fine, but don't go flaunting it in public and, you know, keep it to yourself and give him a hard time. So Rabbi Glucksmann turned to him and he said, excuse me, you're Jewish, aren't you? The guy said, hey, how did you know that? He said, because the guy on the plane was curious and respectful, and you feel guilty, and you're all self-conscious, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so that's the way it is. So that's what the Gemara says, is that we're talking actually about an apikurus that's not Jewish, because an apikurus that's Jewish, you know, sort of like Hatzlacha Rabba, you know, it's not going to happen. The opposite's going to happen, that every time you argue with a person like this, if he really is this, to that extent, close-minded like that Russian Haggadah, then anything you say will actually become a proof that he's right. And that's why you don't answer the Rasha in the Haggadah, and that's why there is not a mitzvah to answer the apikurus that's a Yisrael. Now hopefully we don't encounter people that are really like that, you know, but Rabbeinu Bachaya does have an interesting point. This is in Perek Yud Gimel and Devarim, when it talks about people that are trying to take other people off the derech. If someone comes and tries to tempt you to do Avodah Zarah, so the language of the Pasuk is that to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in ways and to serve gods that you don't know and that your ancestors never knew. So he wants to know how come it says both of those things, you don't know and your ancestors never knew. And he says something that's developed a lot by the Chovos HaLevavos, which was not Rabbeinu Bachaya, despite the similarity in their names, but this idea that it's not enough to rely on a Masorah when it comes to your belief or knowledge in Hashem. You have to have a personal sense of Emunah, and more so, Yediya, knowledge of Hashem. And you know, however that comes about, whether that's a philosophical demonstration or experiential, but it's not enough to just say, well, you know, there was this thing a long time ago, Har Sinai, and I believe. You have to somehow come to an awareness of a Kaddish Baruch Hu on your own. And he ties that into the Mishnah, which is not the way that we were learning it. We weren't learning it as a way to come to a knowledge of Hashem. We were learning it as a way to validate the Torah, to demonstrate the authenticity of it. But he learns over here, he quotes this as a source, that that's what a person is supposed to do, to come to his knowledge of Hashem. And uses this Da Mashitash of Apikuris as a source for that. Anyway, there are many others that have various different points, but it all revolves around things that we have spoken about. That there are two basic ways to learn the Mishnah. One way is encouraging approaching people like this, and that requires a person that really is knowledgeable in Torah. And there's no way to look at it, that that's not really the goal at all. So, the question is, let's say that you are supposed to approach an apikuris, you're not supposed to approach an apikuris. Like, what does this mean in terms of all of the different wisdoms of the world and all and our involvement in that? So I just want to make the following point. There are certain wisdoms of the world that are so important for learning Torah that you really can't go without them. You can't learn Torah without some math. You're wearing sukkah, and you're not going to get anywhere unless you have a sense of some kind of geometry with circumference and diameter and radius. Like, you're not going to be able to get through the Mishnayos and sukkah properly. And Eruv and also, Gemara deals with ratios to know if you have a circular pole, and you want to know if you can use it as a koira for an Eruv, for a mavui. See, you have to know if it's a tefach thick. How do you know if it's a tefach thick? It's round. Well, you got to know circumference and diameter. So these are things that are other than a hechsher mitzvah. Are you going to make birchas Torah when you learn that type of math? No, you're not learning Torah when you're learning the math. But it's necessary in order to understand certain things in Torah. If you don't have a logical thought process, we were talking about logic before, if you don't have a logical thought process, you're not going to be able to follow things. You have to think logically. So maybe you should sit down and learn a little bit of logic. Maybe it's very beneficial to understand the Gemara. So certain things are definitely going to be integral to Limud Torah. Learning the Hebrew language, right? Mitzvah kala. Rambam writes when the Mishnah Pirkei Avos tells you mitzvah kala. It's language. Dikduk. Then there are the opposite extreme. The opposite extreme is what some people say this Mishnah is referring to, which you have to know certain things to be able to approach an apikoros. What are those things? Those things which in and of themselves could be very dangerous to a Jew. Various forms of philosophy and Greek wisdom, and certainly some say that when the Gemara discusses Chachma Yevanis, maybe it refers to riddles, and maybe even refers to things that are almost like pornographic and sexual in nature, and leads a person just in a totally different direction away from spirituality. So those things, that's not even relevant to our mission. But whatever it is, there are certain things that are going to be dangerous to a person's avodas Hashem. So there, if there's any allowance to be involved in it, it's after a person is shkoid lomar Torah, and he has all that Torah under his belt. Now he's going to be the type of personality that can address these people to prevent Chilul Hashem, prevent people going off the derech. So, then there may be a heter. But barring that, and if certainly if a person doesn't have a lot of Torah under his belt, what's he doing learning these kinds of things? It's dangerous to him. Rambam himself, the famous Rambam, the Rambam wrote the word Nebuchim, the Rambam writes, I know all about Avodah Zarah and everything else. He clearly read all the books. But he writes in the Halachas and Perek Beis of Hilchas Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to learn Sifrei Minim. You're not allowed to read Christian books. You're not allowed to read, I don't know, the Quran. Not allowed. This is us. What do you mean? So the answer is, okay, if you're a Mali Kreso, if you're a person that's called a Torah Kula under his belt, and now you need to defend the Torah, you need to be able to answer things, okay, so you're the type of person perhaps that's justified in learning those types of things. Barring that, no head there.
That's why you told me we shouldn't do
American religion. Yup. And then there's things that are in the middle. You know, learning history, learning all kinds of other things that in and of themselves, in terms of Limud Torah, perhaps one can do without, perhaps. But nonetheless, these things are very beneficial to understand a lot of things about the world and how the world functions, and then there's parnasa involved in all of this, and there's going to be a lot of gray area in between, where things aren't in and of themselves directly necessary for certain things in Torah, and nonetheless could be very beneficial, or could be a tremendous waste of time, you know, depending on what they are and how they fit in and what you're doing with it, and that's going to be the gray area in the middle. But that's also an important to try to broaden the picture here a little bit, that there are different, it's not just stam that there's Torah and then there's just other things. In the other wisdoms of the world, there are at least these three categories that are important to keep in mind. So those things that we're saying are adam ashetashiv and are only allowed for people that, mali kreso, so his belly is full. You know, so those are things that are detrimental and dangerous. But the other categories, some things are definitely necessary to learn Torah, and some things maybe not be necessary, but certainly are very beneficial. All right, so at least a beginning of the topic. But that's a fascinating Mishnah. So a Mishnah that we started with, it seemed like it was very abstract and very like, oh, I don't learn Torah, I don't know, you know, like whatever. It turns out there's a lot of depth in this Mishnah, a lot of information is being packed in, and two very different ways to approach a lot of various forms of wisdom and people in the world and how much to be involved in answering questions and the depth of your learning Torah. There's a lot in this Mishnah that certainly, when you start to crack the nut and then, you know, dig in, it does become very, very interesting. All right.